welcome to the Stick Boy Podcast. We are here for one fall, and I am here with the clown prince of charisma, the man that beat me by one measly little point in the G1 pick'em, Mo. So I can give you some time to gloat a little bit, Mo, before we get into this, if you wanna gloat at all.
First off, it's the crown prince, not the clown prince.
Oh, no.
I think you did that on purpose.
Maybe. Slightly.
It's the crown prince. You may be the ultimate baby face, but I am the crown prince. But even more importantly, I beat you by 2 points.
Oh, you beat me by two.
Because I picked Tanahashi, and that's still a pick that counts for 1 point
in the
final match. So I actually beat you by 2 points. So, I mean, I consider it to be it was actually a baby face come from behind win. You had the heat the whole tournament. Like, that, you have the heat, and then at the end, maybe it was a banana peel. Maybe you slipped on the banana peel and it was a banana peel win, but I'd like to think it was a fiery baby face come from behind win. And you're down on the back looking up at the lights, as most of your family members are.
No, I was sitting there. I was like, I gotta beat Mo. And
well, I have 1 year where I will not shut up about it.
Oh yeah, see, and that was my thing. That's where I was like, I just gotta shut Mo up for a year. That's
good
all
luck
I need
on
to
that.
Do. Yeah.
Well, so now you have to live with the fact that not only am I proven to be better looking than you, I'm actually proven to be smarter too. So now there's what do you have? I mean, I can't think of anything.
No.
I can't think of a single thing other than the fact you're younger and I think already making more money. But other than that, which is certainly significant.
both are on my side. I can give me some time and I'll eventually crush you in one of these G1s. Might not be next year, but it will come at some point.
Well, it was that on almost every case, even the cases where I was picking wrong, if I picked wrong, I completely understood the logic why, and I usually had the logic of what the other possibility was, and I just went with the one I thought was most logical, which is usually like a 55%. I thought likely that this would be it,
yeah,
compared to a 45% that it wouldn't be. Like it was, there was so many ways that they could go, but it was pretty early on that you were able to. I think generally could see, okay, this is where it is going. And this was a completely different way to watch it for me, because I was trying to predict, whereas in the past, I'm never trying to figure out what's going on. I'm just watching completely like a sporting event. So it was a different way. I don't know that I preferred it, but at the end of the day, the fact that it actually did come down to the championship match, like it was booked by a booker, that the guy who, if you had won that championship match, you would have blown me away in points, and if I won, I would have made the comeback win, made that match unbelievably exciting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't watch the match live, and we're going to get into the G1, but I had it spoiled for me by one of the guys that used to come on to these podcasts and talk with us. He had called me and said, so Mo was right. And so I knew walking into that match what the results were, because he knew who you picked and he knew who I picked. So that was a little bit of a bummer, because I knew walking into watching it, I was like, oh.
Oh, so you didn't get the drama of that match quite the way you should have.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. But I mean, I also had an inkling, just because the website, by the time I got a chance to watch it, the G1 or the New Japan Pro Wrestling World website kind of spoiled it as well.
That is the one thing, and this will be the last point I hit on before we move into something a little more serious, but that was the issue that I had, because I had Ibushi winning spoiled for me by going just onto the website. And typically, usually they just have the banner up, but I was like, I wasn't even thinking. I was like, oh, well, I'll just go on to New Japan World. And then I saw the banner, and I'm like, ah, crap. Okay, well, let's see how we got there. And then I watched, and I saw Zack Sabre Jr. win. And I was like, okay, I know how this goes. And then...
Yeah, and that's the thing is, wasn't 100% sure, but I was pretty sure who won thanks to their website. So that's one thing they can certainly improve.
Yeah, but I mean, all in all, the... this was a fun experience. I definitely enjoyed this, and I tip my hat to you. Not a lot of people had Tanahashi picked. I look at the Squared Circle subreddit that they had their pick'ems for the G1, and not a lot of people had Tanahashi. So I tip my hat to you for calling Tanahashi, because you were definitely in the minority on that one, and it paid off for you.
And I was in the minority, and you know what? Let's just say the thing we were going to talk about at the beginning, let's switch it to the end.
Yeah,
let's just do that, because we're in the G1 now. Let's talk it. But or switch it to the middle, whatever you want to do. But that's the thing is that, like I said, I had the logic behind it. Nobody, if they're not going back to Okada, and it's always Okada or Tanahashi.
Yeah.
You know, who is the guy who main events. And the fact that people couldn't see that, and the fact that he hadn't been as successful lately, is just how New Japan books, yeah. where it's part of a bigger storyline. If a guy's not is if it, like I say, it was like Kushida last year going into the Super Juniors, you know, where he got blown out by, you know, in what was it, like 2 minutes at the Tokyo Dome or something like that?
Yeah.
And it was part of his journey. Like, so people think they're – people look at it still from WWE eyes.
Yeah.
And they look at it from, oh, I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't do that, right? Like, I wouldn't friggin' – I wouldn't put, you know, Yoshihashi over Hangman Page. Like, that was one of the ones that I picked over you.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't picked that, and then last – like 4 to 5 matches in the last day, I picked up 3 points on you.
Yeah, you gained some
in the second – in the last day from Block A. And it was because you're going, oh, I would never – and most people wouldn't, but they would.
Yeah.
Because they book it so that everybody kind of ends up at the same level. Like, they don't want anybody hurt, and then they'll just focus on the big wins. So they'll focus on Hangman Page's big win over Suzuki.
Yeah.
And the fact that he loses to Tana or to Yoshihashi will be kind of swept under the rug. But Yoshihashi can say he finished tied with all these other guys.
Yeah.
It's just the way they do it.
No, and for me, this is an incredible, because I watched the year that Kenny won. I watched bits and pieces of that. I watched a lot more the following year, but I wasn't quite as in depth. I was following key matchups and bigger moments, and ultimately that Kenny Okada match on the last night before the finals. And this year was the first year that I really every night that was watching G1 or watching analyzing everything. And then when going into those pick'ems, going in and trying towards the end, starting to look at, okay, who's beaten who and where mathematically could people go. And it's still tricky for me, as this was the first real time doing that. So I think I think it made it a lot more fun. It definitely gave it more of a sports feel to the G1. And there were nights where I was watching, because I was working overnights during the G1, and it would be on off to the side. And just the passion for watching some of these matches and the lower card matches, and having more passion for them and being like, this matters, because if this guy beats this guy, then I gain a point on Mo.
It's so true. All of a sudden, a match with Makabe means a lot more than it did before. Whereas before, you're like, let's get past this match so we can get to the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's like, well, I still care what happens here, you know? That meant a lot.
Yeah, so I definitely think, and I mean, you're gonna have the crown heading into next year, so.
And if we get more people, I think we would have separated. I took a lot more risks than you.
Yeah.
But I also had a bigger picture of where they were gonna go in the end.
Yeah.
And you were took a few less risks, but you didn't, and that's why I beat you. But that's also why you got ahead of me.
Yeah, and it was very interesting watching and seeing. Like, there were certain points where, like, there are picks now I look back on, like, you had picked a draw with Suzuki and Bad Luck Fale, and I picked Suzuki, and I was like, I'm going with this because I think that there may be something with this where there's more pressure on the OG BCs, so I thought there was going to be more pressure on them, and Suzuki would pick up the win. And then I thought about your draw pick, and I'm like, that's a really good pick, because it could easily turn into a mess and just end in a no contest, which would account for a draw.
I could have seen both factions just completely hitting the ring, like just a huge schmoz. And that was my logic, because I knew there was going to be a draw that night,
yeah,
or the next night. Like, and that match the match between Omega and Ibushi, which you had picked as a draw, I thought could be a draw, and I picked that. Or the Okada Tanahashi match. Like, I knew that there was going to be, but I knew there wasn't going to be more than one. So I was hedging my bets, you know, on which one it would be.
No, I had hovered over the draw button for Tanahashi and Okada, and I'm like, no, I think they're going to, this will carry, I thought they were going to carry into the story where Okada lost, and just further seeing that fracture and that facade really kind of slip away for a moment, where he's fully been defeated by a guy that he's beaten the last couple times they faced. And that's where I kind of landed on, because, again, we're seeing this Okada that's slipping, and the once great rainmaker that had all this jewelry, the fancy coat, the nice clothes, the dollar bill, the rainmaker bills that fall from the sky, that he makes it rain for New Japan, he's really no longer that guy, is he?
No, and he really isn't, and of course he couldn't have his balloons, and what is he without his balloons?
Yeah, that I got a good chuckle out of that. I saw that, and it's a little bit of chuckling, but it's a little bit of sadness. Since we're talking about Okada, what do you think's next for him? Where do you think Okada goes next?
Well, I still think we're looking at Okada versus Jay White. But the fact, I mean, it's very interesting because how they did it, because Tanahashi didn't beat him, so he still doesn't have that win. So they still left you, so you want to see that match. But he was dominating at the end.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he was coming with a high five flow at the end. And it's just that he ran out of time and he was about to beat him, is how it felt. So, but he didn't, right?
Yeah.
And then, so you still have that. And so to me, that's like, okay, that's, if it's not Tokyo Dome, because we know Tokyo Dome's not that, that's the setup for another big match, either Dominion or MSG down the road, is what that feels like. So, which is, again, pretty damn brilliant way of booking it.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I do think that, and this is what I had thought. I thought Jay White was going to win. Jay White was going to come down, and this was what I was dreading. And I knew this was a risk because they're not going to want interference. They've had so much, but maybe they've been setting up all this interference, I thought, so that Jay White could come out and try and help Okada win. Because if Okada had won, Jay White, through the tiebreaker, would have gone to the finals. And when Okada would have refused his help, then he would have turned on him. That would have set up their feud.
Yeah.
Because I think the battle for who's in charge of chaos is definitely coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be different than what we saw with Cody and Kenny, but there's definitely that battle, because it's funny, because the night that everything happened with the BC, the next night there was a press conference with Jay White and Okada, and Jay White announcing he had joined Chaos, and that you see that he doesn't really care about Chaos, but he'll use Chaos when it benefits him. And now with Jay White, I definitely think he could take... I don't see Okada losing his spot in Chaos and losing to Jay White, but there's a possibility that they could as well, to really help elevate Jay White.
There's also the fact that Okada broke up with Gato.
Yep, exactly.
And that's going to play into this, I imagine, in some way as well. Gato will no longer be accompanying him. What if he starts accompanying Jay White?
Yeah, because he is still part of Chaos, so that could be his horse that he starts picking and start really pumping up. Because has Gato and Okada been together since pretty much the beginning of Okada's run on top?
Since the Rainmaker, since he came in with the Rainmaker character after his, and I think it was 2012, after his excursion, they have been together.
So that's
a long way, and it was broken off in a very quiet backstage thing.
Yeah, so that's very interesting, and that's really, I find that that's almost like a little Easter egg for anyone that's really following the product and really watching, that is something that's kind of left for them to kind of grasp on and go, oh, this is new and different. So it's going to be very interesting to see Okada's next big match, how he fares and how he performs, because now this is a guy that at the start of the year, I was surprised he beat Naito, now looking back on it, it makes a lot of sense. And that is the one thing with New Japan I find, is that more times than not, looking back on things, it's like, wow, this is actually really smart the way this is all pieced together. He was on top of the world. Nothing could touch him until he himself called up Kenny. He needed to correct that draw against Omega, and it cost him everything, essentially. And now he's slipping. He has the balloons. He's whacking Rocky Romero. He lost to Jay White. He started 0-2. That is not something I expected right off the hop with Okada.
Well, but you had said, you had talked about the first night you picked on Ashi to lose, and I was like, are you nuts? I basically said to you, and you're like, well, I see the story often of somebody who gets down and then makes the comeback.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but that's not him. That was Okada.
Yeah, and see, and that was a thing where he came close, but he failed again, and that ties in ultimately with that Okada story, where it's a guy that stumbled, picked it back up. And I think the other story with this G1, and you can tell me what your thoughts on it, I think I have a feeling that he's either going to finally get the Rainmaker to work again, or he's going to transition to something else, because he really wasn't effectively using the Rainmaker in big matches. People were reversing it. People were ducking it. Tanahashi.
Yeah, he did. He did use it a couple times, but he exchanged it to that spinning Rainmaker, yeah, yeah, and then hit the Rainmaker. So there definitely could be something going on with that. He did hit it to win a couple matches to get his momentum back. But you're right. He wasn't able to hit it when it was in the matches where it counted the most.
Yeah, and I mean, you look back on that that G1 match, not the G1 match, the Dominion match with Kenny. If I remember correctly, that first pinfall that Okada got was a roll-up. It wasn't thanks to the Rainmaker. He didn't get a Rainmaker pinfall in that. So it's a very
And in the second match, he hit, I think, three Rainmakers, and Kenny kicked out of all of them. And Don Callis had talked about that, how Kenny had put on 15 pounds of muscle. And then that the storyline was, now he was so strong and big in the upper body that this Rainmaker wasn't as effective as before, and he could no longer use this best move to beat Kenny.
Yeah, and now it almost feels like other people, other top talent in New Japan, have figured this out, and they have figured out a way to deal with the Rainmaker. Because you talk about it, he did use the Rainmaker, but he didn't use the Rainmaker in big matches for himself. He didn't have the big match.
It didn't get him the win that it needed to when he needed it most.
Yeah, and that's what matters. That you can talk about him getting the Rainmaker on certain guys, but that they're all more or less a step above, step below Okada. So for him to hit the Rainmaker on it, it makes sense. But to not use to not effectively use the Rainmaker on a guy like Tanahashi, that is where you start to kind of go, this isn't good, because this is a guy that was his money shot. You knew it took a couple Rainmakers, but you knew once he hit it and really got it in, it was over. The match was done. And now when he hits that Rainmaker, you doubt it almost now. You're like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be the finale. So it's going to be interesting to see where they take Okada, where he goes at the next Wrestle Kingdom. I do wonder, he ultimately will climb back on top.
There's no question.
There's no way Okada will not, and that's a long-term, that could be potentially a two-year story about Okada climbing back on top.
Barring injury, there's no way he's not in the main event of the 2020 Tokyo Dome. Yeah,
because that is on a Saturday.
No chance.
And that's a very important moment for New Japan, because they will definitely want to sell out a Saturday Tokyo Dome show.
Yeah.
And now transitioning to someone I think I could see in the main event with Okada at that point, and someone that kind of struggled a little bit, lost the first night. What are your thoughts on Tetsui Naito? Tetsui Naito. I thought I said that wrong.
Well, I say Naito because that's how the ring announcers call it. So I assume that's correct.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say Naito. So I don't know. I do know Tetsui is right.
I got half of it right. That's just the small victories in life, Mo. Those are what matter.
Small victories in life. Those are the only ones that really count. Yeah. Again, it. And this is the thing that it set up. He had the the whole storyline for him was, A, he got down and he was chasing, but he still had a shot on that final night. And what was going to happen when he had to face Sonata, who kept on tagging with him but wouldn't do the fist bump with him afterwards. Yeah. So this was the whole storyline he had. And it was – maybe it's because they're having too many groups, you know, shatter or whatever. So they didn't pursue that storyline at the end.
Yep.
Between the two of them. So that does make it difficult to see, though, where his role is. Much like Okada, like I'm sure Okada is going to go with Jay White, but I don't know what he's going to do until the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Like, I have no clue. You know, and Naito, I'm sure he's going to, like, I'm sure it's going to be him and Jericho at the Tokyo Dome. I'm positive for a rematch for the Intercontinental Belt. But until then, I don't know. See, that's the thing is they don't go really heavy right now. I mean, they take a few weeks off. They should. These guys are dead, you know. And but then they start to build it up a little bit in the fall, and it's all about building momentum. And so they got to have storylines, and that's what's really not – it's really not clear at all.
No. And that was the one thing because – This is a guy that there's that one point where I thought he was going to get through to the finals, basically through Tranquilo, and just it was all going to work out for him. He was going to beat Zach, and then Kenny and Kota would kill each other and draw, and then he would just slip in by winning that final night against Zack Sabre Jr. And I thought that could be potentially a way that they go, but they didn't. He lost to Zach, and that kind of leaves you kind of wondering. I think Los Ingobernables might be pairing off with Suzuki-Gun, but I'm not entirely sure. That could be potentially, but Naito is a guy that I think ultimately will, I can see him in the main event for Wrestle Kingdom 2020, that Saturday show, just based on how popular he is. And I went on the New Japan, the official New Japan merchandise site, and it's all in Japanese. But you see that four merch in Japan are Naito stuff. Naito is very popular there, so I could see a world.
He's the most popular guy in the company, in Japan. The question is this: he's the most popular guy in Japan, and he's popular elsewhere. But do they see him as the most popular guy in Japan, or do they see him as the guy who can lead them through the rest of the world? That's the thing.
Yep.
Right?
Yep,
like, they're absolutely trying to break into other markets right now.
Yep.
He's the coolest guy in the room. No question about it. But does he translate to other markets? And I think that's why we haven't seen them go with him. That's the only reason I can think of.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree, because you look at it and you look at I was going to ask you, because I'm not 100% sure, and this is a good learning for the listeners, who's the main company for the G1 supercard, the MSG show? Is it Ring of Honor, New Japan, or are they kind of even keel here?
You know, that's interesting. I think it's Ring of Honor.
Okay.
It's going to be, I don't know if it'll be on New Japan World. I know it'll be on the Ring of Honor Honor Club, put it that way. They were going to book it with or without New Japan, and they probably would have done well with or without New Japan, though not as well. That said, I think even Ring of Honor knows the shape of the world.
Yeah.
And I think even Ring of Honor knows, okay, this is New Japan. New Japan is the company that is the
draw.
Has the biggest draw with the audience.
Yeah.
Especially in MSG.
Yeah. So I was curious, because that kind of plays a factor in what you had said, is New Japan definitely wants to start getting in other markets and start building up. And with a guy like Naito, for hardcore fans, I think he translates very well. But I don't know if he's the face that you want to run with. And it's a very interesting case where you think he feels like he's just touching that glass ceiling. He could break through it, but the company could also kind of lower him a little bit where he doesn't quite touch the glass anymore. So it's very interesting what they're going to do. And I mean, he's definitely a guy that I could see in the main event. I mean, when you want to sell out Wrestle Kingdom, I think it's smart to market towards the Japanese fans, because they're more likely to show up. Though I did hear a lot of reports that there were a lot of different people from Canada, US, Australia at these shows. But with Naito and his direction, it seems kind of like his character. You're not quite sure where it's going to go. He seems very relaxed and calm about everything. So I'm sure they're going to find something for him for Wrestle Kingdom this next year. But
well, is he a babyface or heel? I still don't know. There was one match where he definitely was a heel in this tournament, but you know, against Ibushi, but. Yeah. He's never changed being the heelish character or the heelish behavior ever. It's just people love him. But the anti-hero, like Steve Austin, he was the anti-hero, but it was even The Rock, they never lost their edge to a degree. But it was obvious why they're a babyface. I don't know to a casual fan if they would get why he's a babyface, but maybe I'm wrong, because he is cool, right? And, and at the end of the day, in the modern era, being cool trumps being good. Michael Elgin's character in New Japan is the most stand-up, honest, not the real guy, obviously, but the most stand-up, honest, honest character, like the most, you know, hard-working, straightforward, white meat, shake his hands of the people who beat him, try his best character in the world. And he's one billionth as cool.
Yep.
As Naito.
Yeah. And I mean, you just kind of get that feeling of, I really enjoy watching Naito wrestle. I think he's a tremendous, tremendous wrestler, and I love his spots, and I love when he does his, makes it look like he's going to do a dive out of the ring and slides into the middle of the ring, or just his calm demeanor. I'm very interested to see where Naito goes. Obviously, this year, G1 didn't work out for him.
Will he ever get it the ball? I don't know.
That's really weird. I think that's a question that will linger on for at least another year and a half. And I think the biggest indication is...
Who he reminds me of here?
Who does he remind you of?
CM Punk. Because CM Punk had the belt forever, but he was never given the ball.
No.
Punk was never given, even the whole time John Cena was in all the main events,
yep,
that he had the belt. He was never, they're just for some reason, he was incredibly popular, but they never went with him, despite the fact that it seemed obvious. That's what this reminds me of.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, that's actually a really good point, because you know that Kenny is going to be in the main event for a bit here. You know Tanahashi will always be, float around in that main event scene. And you know Okada's always going to float around.
And then there's all the contract issues, right?
Yeah.
That changes things too.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Believe me, we're going to get to that. But the question on Naito really lingers on, is he going to be the guy for New Japan? And I think the biggest indicator will be the 2020 Wrestle Kingdom. I think, because I just feel like that's a big show for New Japan, because that is on a Saturday, and that's a big deal because no one's going to be working that day, at least in Japan. So that gives people from Japan and potentially all across the world to come in, and to sell out the Tokyo Dome is a big deal. So I think that will be your indicator where New Japan wants to take things, and I think Gato is already thinking about plans for that.
And oh, Gato's always several steps ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what? We're talking about this like subtle character development. It's like, man, people who are just WWE fans, they must be going out of their mind listening to this. It's like, what? What? You know?
No. Like, yeah. It's
because you just don't see this.
No, it's the that's the one thing I really like about New Japan is the subtle little things that they add to their matches, to their to what the characters are doing. It feels like a TV show that these characters grow and progress. It doesn't feel like Kenny Omega, when I first saw him and I really liked him, was the first time he came out as the cleaner and was a junior. And I was like, oh, I like Kenny. I want to see where he goes. And you've just seen this growth from the cleaner to the leader of the Bullet Club, to the best bout machine and then to the Golden Elite now to where he is. And it's a great ride. It feels like I've followed him on this little journey that he's taken for the last several years. And it's a lot of fun to see. And same with Okada. Same with Tanahashi. Same, all these guys have different growth. Same with Kushida, Will Ospreay. Everyone's kind of have little subtleties that have changed to them. And it's just smart, smart booking. And I don't... I'm curious in how it works backstage with New Japan, if this is all the brainchild from Gedo, or if this is from the wrestlers themselves kind of working with Gedo to add these little things to help build them up.
Well, and this I can give some insight on. Like they talk about this, like for instance, the Cody stuff with Kenny Omega, that wasn't Gedo. They started just doing that. Just like Jay White actually just started saying things like at the press conference, I don't know why I'm with Chaos and we're on the same team doesn't mean I can't compete for the belt. I can't challenge for the championship. Nobody told him to say that. That's just something that they say. This is the brilliance of letting people have their characters and own them. Then the booker can use what he wants to or not want to. Gedo gives the direction on... He gives the finish to the match. He doesn't tell people how to build the match. He just says, this is the finish. This is the move that you win with, and this is how long. And then they go there. And for storylines, he takes the input of the wrestlers, and he sees what's going on, and he builds it around it. And if he needs them to make a change, he'll tell them. But it's the opposite of the control freak mentality that we see elsewhere.
Yeah, Connecticut seems to like to have control over things. But that's actually really neat to know, because that changes every time you look at it. It's nice to know that these guys, that I guess that's probably why Hangman Page gets to come out in the ring with no boots, because he threw those out and because he got ketchup on them, not blood from famous dick wrestler Joey Ryan. It's those little subtleties that they do that I really enjoy. Like that, an example of that.
There's nothing better in the world than hearing the sentence "famous dick wrestler."
That just on a little side tangent, talking about little subtleties. That being the Elite is one of my favorite things to watch on Mondays. I will pick that over Monday Night Raw 10 times out of 10 because I enjoy everything that they do, from SCU to. Their dicks in real life, to Joey Ryan, to everything that they do on that show, I enjoy.
And it's not that long.
No, it's not. And learning that Marty's in a little bit of trouble for All In is always a great little segment. But back to New Japan.
There's more character development on thanks to being the Elite, even though it's not like he's dominating the screen a half hour a week.
Nope.
Of being the Elite on Flip Gordon than there has been on Apollo Crews in 2.5 years since he's been up on the main roster.
One of my favorite things from being the Elite is that whole thing where Flip finally snaps and he kicks and he starts beating up all the being the Elite castmates, and he accidentally stabs Kenny, and Marty goes, "Oh my God, you killed Kenny!" And that whole little segment with them. And then him walking off into the sunset. Finally, it was one of my favorite moments from the show, and just
it's awesome.
It's such an easy watch. But shifting gears, there's still a few other guys from the G1 that I want to talk about. And I'm gonna skip over one of them purposely because I want to talk about them closer to the end. But let's talk about Kenny Omega.
And we don't have to take long on it. Why don't you take all 20 guys and we can rate their performance overall from like an A to an F?
Yeah, let's
want to do that?
Yeah, let's go with that, because that actually sounds like a really good idea. I'm very high on a lot of the guys here. Overall, there was a lot of things that impressed me, and this tournament just is another shining example of something that I don't think would transition over here, and I think that's partly because of who's involved in it. So I've got Block A and Block B in front of me. Let's start with Block A, and I'll start from the bottom. Bad Luck Fale.
Everything was exactly what he was supposed to do. He did, like as far as getting heat and the storyline that they were building, and it did have a payoff. And he himself, the loss of weight is good for him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like you weren't counted on him to be – he didn't elevate himself or anything, but he was solid. I'd say let's say a B minus.
I'm going to – I'll give him a C. You know, that solid guy that you knew would be there. Nothing that was crazy from Fale. There's a lot of hate for the OGBC, like you'd said, and that's exactly what you want. There was a tie at the bottom, so the next name above him is Hangman Page. How did you think he'd do in his debut?
I knew Hangman Page would be really good, and it's interesting. You look at the guys who were left out, not only this year, but guys who, you know, like Chucky T last year who replaced Beretta, and, you know, guys like this who didn't get a shot again. And then you get Hangman Page in there, and I have been – I wasn't always the biggest Hangman Page guy, but I've been coming onto him over the last year, seeing so much, and he continues to get better. I'm still not a fan of the gimmick, but he really elevated himself. I would give him a solid, you know what, A minus.
Yep, I absolutely agree. I'd say an A for well, you know what, B plus. He was exactly what he needed to be, and I think he could be a guy that next year could come into this tournament and definitely pick up a few more surprise wins and really elevate himself. Next up is Togi Makabe.
Yeah, he's a C. Yeah. You know, I mean, he doesn't have bad performances, but at this point, he's a guy who, after 26 years in the business, and I know why he's in the G1. He's the most famous wrestler in New Japan Pro Wrestling because of his mainstream work, hosting television over there. He's a huge star. I would like to see him gone because I know they can replace him with somebody more interesting. So he's a C. He's certainly never bad, but there's nothing there really.
Yeah, no, I give him a C. There's never a point where I was like, man, I want to see what he's doing next. I was kind of like, oh, he's there. Well, I'll watch through and see how this match ends. But there's never a point where I'm like, oh, man, I got to know how this ends. Next up, one of the second last people with 6 points, Michael Elgin.
I think Michael Elgin was really, really good. Like I say, he's the modern-day Steve Williams. In a different era, he'd already be in a main event slot. But because the wrestling style has changed and he doesn't have a lot of color to him, he's just a guy who provides you really solid stuff. Yeah, he deserves his heat outside the ring, but in the ring, I don't think you can deny him. I give him a B+.
Yeah, I'd give him a B. I always enjoyed watching Elgin work. I remember the first time I saw him was when he wrestled Kenny. And I was like, ooh, this Michael Elgin's actually half decent. And yeah, I don't want to get into the outer ring stuff, but in ring, he seems to be a guy that can at least be a solid hand that will deliver what you need. So
it's pretty obvious that New Japan, they were planning to use him on, you know, some of the shows over here in North America. And because, I mean, that's the thing. They try and put North Americans in the North American events in really high places. And they found out after, they didn't even know that he had all the heat over here. Yeah. And they found out after and had to find a way to book him out of it. That's why he lost to Goto after getting the belt right away, right? So that he wasn't even in the show over here in the last show. So I think that's what's definitely hurting him, that heat is following him.
It'll be interesting to see if he can shake that or if it continues to grow. Last one, Yoshihashi. With the 6 points.
You know, I'm going to give him a B because I do think his in-ring stuff was really good. But the problem with him is B is his ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, whereas there's a lot of guys out there with a ceiling that's higher. His in-ring work was very good, though.
Yeah, he's definitely a solid worker, but I just felt a little flat. But that's, I mean, you're going to have that where some guys... their ceilings are only so high, and there's other guys that the ending could end in like the A++, and he's just not one of those guys. So
I just don't know long term where you go with him. You know, he's the type of guy who, if he had been placed in a tag team, a really good tag team, that was he become his tag team specialist. He could have been a guy who's, you know, on and off winning the tag team title belts for years. But he isn't that, and he's clearly not a single star. So I just – what is he? He's, where do you go with him?
Yeah.
He's Yoshihashi.
Yeah. Floats around. He's there. So next, there was two men that tied for 10 points. And on the bottom here is Evil. Everything is Evil. How did he do in this G1?
You know, last year he's the guy who kind of like was Hangman Page, where he just, he really opened eyes. Now he's kind of more of an established act. He's solid. There's nothing that excites me, but it's just solid matches. B minus.
Yeah, B for me. You know who Evil is. You know what you're going to get from him. And you just kind of go in and let it all be. He kind of intrigues me from time to time, but not as much as you would hope. The other guy that finished with 10 points and terrifies the hell out of me, if I ever saw him walking down the street, I would run away, is Minoru Suzuki at 50. He's 50 years old, and I'm terrified of a 50-year-old. How did he do in this G1, Mo?
Well, Minoru Suzuki, I think, is the best gimmick in the business right now. And that gimmick is, there's a shoot element to that gimmick, and that's part of why it's so damn good.
Yep.
The matches, he didn't do anything that was like, wow, we're great matches, but he's just always a great presence. And at 50 years old, he's amazing because we see so many guys who are beat up. And, you know, even Tanahashi, you know, who's younger than him, but just you clearly beat up. And, yeah, so I think that he was good, but and there is something to his matches, right, where it's the brawl, the chair shots, then you lock the holds. There is a pattern to them.
Yep.
You know? So let's say a C plus.
You know, I'll give him a B just purely because I'm terrified of him. And Suzuki's always one that will draw me in and I'll be kind of intrigued. But you're absolutely right. There is that pattern to him, and you kind of know where he's gonna go. He's gonna wrench on your knee or he's gonna wrench on your arm, and then he's either gonna win or lose. And if regardless if he wins or loses, young lions will die outside of that ring.
Oh yes.
Next, finished third place this year in his 2018 G1 debut, Jay White. How did he do?
Jay White did great. Jay White established his character so brilliantly. His matches were all right, but it's not about matches for him. It's about the psychology and the character, the guy who wins because he's smart. You know what he is? You know Brian Kendrick? This is what Brian Kendrick wanted to be when he came back to the WWE here. This is what he was kind of in the Cruiserweight Classic and what he wanted to be, like this type of character who's really, really smart, and that's what gets him the wins. He's smarter than you.
Yeah.
So I think he did really, really well. I'd give him a B+.
Yeah, I'd give him a B+. I was always intrigued by what Jay White would do and if he could potentially shock everyone and get to the G1. Next person, just ahead of Jay White, leader of chaos. He loves his balloons, Kazuka Okada. How did he do? How did the former IWGP heavyweight champion perform?
He's still the best wrestler in the world.
Yep.
I like the fact that he's doing something different with his character. I like the changes. He's experimenting. He's taking this time to experiment as much as that's a shoot, not just a work, right? So he's who he is. This is for him probably as average as he can be, and as average as he can be as a B+, because he's the best in the world.
Yeah. I'm going to give him an A for me. I was drawn into everything Okada did, from his entrance with the balloons to just what was going to happen. I was fascinated with this Okada character, much like in TV shows where you have these characters that struggle or fall, and just their overarching story arc. Okada's story drew me in, so he gets an A from me. And the winner of the A block, Mo's pick, Hiroshi Tanahashi, who is loved in Japan, absolutely adored. This is a record with him winning three G1s, correct?
No, I don't think. Well, the G1 wasn't always the G1. It was I can't remember what it was called before, but it was something else before. And Inoki won like numerous times. So as the G1, it might be a record. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But if you count the previous incarnation, I don't believe it is. I think Inoki won like five times or something like that, you know. But yeah, I mean, Okada's the best overall wrestler in the world, and Okada does a couple things. Okada's better at, like, if he's wrestling a Minoru Suzuki match, it's that Minoru Suzuki match, and he can wrestle that match. Whereas Minoru Suzuki's always going to wrestle that match. And if he's wrestling, and Okada can wrestle, he's the chameleon who can take on other people's matches and build the psychology. Tanahashi's not the overall best in the world, but he's the best at bringing emotion out of the audience. Daniel Bryan is the best at your babyface comeback, you know. But Tanahashi is the best at creating a story in the ring that creates emotion from the audience. Johnny Gargano is probably second best. So he was brilliant at doing that through this tournament. And he's the right guy to win, and I would give him an A.
Yeah, I'd give him an A as well. The ace of Japan.
He's lost a step, man. If you watch him 5 to 7 years ago, he's lost one step, two steps. He looks like he's in pain coming to the ring. He's in pain all the time. He is. He's hurting so much. He's hurting so much all the time. But he's like Shawn Michaels, where he changed his style to become a better storyteller.
Yeah.
And even when he couldn't do all the things, he would still do them when he needed to. And even if he couldn't do them all the time, he became a better storyteller.
Yeah. I've seen some talk online about Tanahashi being in the top five overall of just wrestlers ever. And you talk about it. And that was the other thing that I would see is talking about Tanahashi now, but if you looked at Tanahashi in his prime, it's different. And I definitely think I need to do some more research on Tanahashi and watch some of his big matches from back in the day. But he, I mean, you listen to that crowd reaction he got on the final night, and I think that tells you all you need to know about.
Well, because that was against Ibushi, who's also loved, and yet it was clear.
Yeah,
it was clear that Tanahashi was the guy.
Yeah. And I think that was a smart pick. And
the interesting thing about that is 3 years ago, he was getting booed regularly. He was John Cena. He'd been pushed down people's throats. They were trying to get you to cheer him. But he turned that around. He's turned that around. That's what's really interesting. If you go back 3 years ago, people were ready to see him no longer in the main event.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Go watch some of the G1 from 3 years ago, and you'll find that. It's very interesting.
Fascinating. That's definitely a nice little tidbit. So Block A, you know, that was a decent block, but I think the next block was I enjoyed just a little bit more. And yes. We're gonna start from the bottom. 6 points for the apparent leader. Well, there's no leader, but he's one guy that he could potentially be seen as the leader for the OGBC. It is Tama Tonga. How did he do for you?
Yeah, I think Fale is the leader, but this is the worst wrestling he ever did, but the most heat he ever garnered, which is what he wanted to do. So I give him a B.
Yeah, I'd give him a B because he pissed people off, and is exactly what you want. And just the hatred and like, oh, I don't want to see them. I can't believe they had more interference. And it's like that's what you want, because that's generating some heat, so that when someone finally vanquishes them, it means more.
Whoever generates heat in the WWE like this, other than Roman Reigns, who they want you to cheer?
Yeah,
think about it. He generated that heat, wanting to get that kind of heat.
Yeah. The only guy that I can think of, and it's starting to turn now, is Ciampa. The only other guy that I think wants that heat and gets that heat.
But I don't consider NXT a WWE.
No, because it's far away from the brain of Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Also with 6 points, there was this little comedy wrestler that beat the Golden Lovers, Tori Iano. How do you feel about him this year?
I love Tori Iano. I'm a big fan. I do love his comedy, and he makes me laugh. And somehow he continues to make me laugh, even though there's not that many layers to what he does. and they changed things up a little bit this year, the fair play. I think he was really good in his role, so B minus.
I give him a B. I definitely got a chuckle out of Iano. He's a guy that you can laugh for 5-10 minutes at, and then you can happily move on to the next match. and enjoy. I liked his match
and
against Kenny.
And you know he can really wrestle, and that's what makes it work. Because you know he really can.
Yeah, and you saw little glimpses of it in this G1, so that was important to help establish maybe a little bit more competitive Yano, and maybe he picks up a few more wins next year. Because I imagine he will be probably part of the G1 again, because a night against Giano seems to be not a terrible night for these guys in this grueling
Which
tournament.
They need. Yeah. In this physical. I think the G1, with all due respect to the Tour de France, I think the only thing in sports or entertainment that is more physically grueling and grinding is the NHL playoffs.
Yes, no, I would agree. I remember hearing that story about Patrice Bergeron and just torn cartilage in his ribs, punctured lung, just beaten, bruised, and battered, and they won a cup with him, and he was playing in the final game. So,
yeah
I think this is definitely comparable to hockey playoffs. And after Yano, there's another person with 6 points. He was in the finals 2 years ago, Hiroki Goto. What do you think of his performance?
Probably a C+.
Yeah.
He had good matches, but he wasn't a focus. No. And, you know, it's funny. They've taken away the IC belt, and there still feels like there's too many belts.
Yeah, it's very crowded. It's very, very crowded with belts. That's because I've heard rumors of them wanting to retire the IC belt just because of how crowded it is. But I'm very interested to see how that plays out. But there's a lot of belts in Japan.
Yeah.
Talking about belts, we got also the last one with 6 points. Juice Robinson. How'd he do?
I love this storyline. like Juice Robinson he's the best pure 1970s babyface in the business. So I think he did terrific. B+.
Yeah, B+ for me. I like the hand storyline. I liked his promos. I liked his promos in being the elite. Anytime he kind of talked, I was intrigued by Juice. So
yeah, it's funny because you see him come to the ring and give like the hat to the kids, and it gets over so big, and then you're like, dude, if you're the one person, I don't care if they're swearing. I know they want to get rid of it, but I don't care if they're swearing in New Japan. You're the one guy who shouldn't be swearing. I know you just can't seem to help yourself, Juice, but you're the one guy who the kids love so much.
Yeah, I think I don't care about the swearing either, but I think as a company moving forward, I think it's smart to limit that. And he's definitely one guy that you want to kind of ex-nay on the swearing.
It would be good for him.
Yeah. Next person, 8 points. I'm going to butcher his name. You helped me the last time, so you'll probably have to help me again. Sanada.
I don't know why that's hard to you.
That's the one that I struggle with. I can get everything else, but Sanada's the one that trips me up. How do you think he did? I think he definitely had a good showing in this tournament. I enjoyed his spot with Yano. I enjoyed his matches. I'd give him a solid B+.
See, and I would give him a B-, and it is the thing where it's like he's exactly what you thought he'd be. You thought he would be solid, and he was solid. And he had good matches, and I liked his match with Zack Sabre Jr. because he out-wrestled Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, everything they say about him, that he can't quite unlock that charisma, he's still loved. But because he's part of Los Ingobernables de Japón, and I'll butcher that, but not as bad as Steve Corino. But he's still loved, but there's another level he can still reach.
Yeah, I think he's hopefully as time goes on he can. I love it when these guys reach their full potential and even exceed their potential and move to that next level. So anytime a guy can do that, I'm all for it, because we as the viewers benefit from guys growing and progressing. This guy, the next guy, 10 points, is the MVP of the G1 for me. He is I've really liked him for a while now, and this has just solidified him. he was the first one to defeat Kenny Omega. He gets an A+ from me is Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah, Ishii gets an A+ from me as well. It was undeniable. He's so good. He's so Ishii. There's no other Ishii, and yeah, he's. I can't. You to fully appreciate Ishii, you'd have to watch like 10 Ishii matches, and that's what the G1 is, right? Yeah. And then, yeah, he was phenomenal.
There were points where you just root for the guy, and in his match with Kenny, they're going to have an incredible match. Cannot wait for that main event.
Won't be beat up going into it. About how that this was it when they were beat up.
Oh yeah, this is healthy. I'm really excited. This is a match that I can get into. Question about Ishii. Is he a guy that you could ever see with the heavyweight belt, or is he always going to be a rung below?
He will always be a rung below, but I would put the belt on him.
Yeah, I would agree as well. Did he not beat Okada and never got his title match? Because I see that pop up every once in a while.
You know what? That's possible. I can't recall. But yeah. That is possible. I know. Yeah. I think now that you mentioned it, I do think that's the case.
So that's the only reason the Rainmaker had such a nice long run is he ducked his Chaos mate.
I think that's it. They were both in the same group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 12 points. We've talked about him a lot. How did Naito do in this tournament? Is he in?
Well, he had, I think, the best match in the tournament of the night, one with Omega. He had fantastic matches, and he is great. I give him an A-.
Yeah, an A-. Could have seen a little bit more from Naito, but I think all in all, you always knew what you were going to get from him, and you could dive in, and you could get exactly what you want from a Naito. Here's one I'm interested to get your opinion on. Zack Sabre Jr., 12 points.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this to you before. I've never gone into it too much, but I'm not a Zack Sabre Jr. fan. No. Like, I'm not at all a Zack Sabre Jr. fan. That said, for what he's supposed to be and what they wanted him to be, I mean, his performances are fine. I don't like his psychology in the ring. I think it's often... He wrestles, even though he does, like, you know, this British style of joint manipulation wrestling, his wrestling psychology and his persona is the same as Bad Luck Fale's, the bully, and that does not work for me.
No.
That, plus he's so damn skinny. I'm sorry. Like, I just feel like, I just look at him and think, why doesn't somebody just bum rush him and beat the fuck out of him? Like, that's all I keep thinking when I see him. So I'm not a fan. At all, but more, it's more the psychology and this persona. I don't like it. I think if he was more like Jay White, he would be far more effective, persona wise. So
just outsmarting you.
Yeah, and knowing he's good, but not having to, but not the bully stuff. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
No?
It doesn't fit. So I'm not, like I say. So I can't give him too much, but I know he was as fine for what he needs to be. So B-.
Yeah, I'd give him a B. I enjoy Zack Sabre Jr. a little bit more than you, though I do think that I think he has reached his ceiling in New Japan.
He never gives, it's very, very rare to me, he gives the other guy anything in the ring.
It's very much a Zack, it's either a Zack
Sabre Jr. It's the Zack show.
Yeah, it's either his match or there's nothing else with it. I've never really seen him wrestle a different style, so that definitely does.
Not only just a different style, but it really is. He really is just, he puts the guys in a hold and they're in there for so long. He doesn't give back. You never have the sense that he's in danger and that the other guy's getting over on even a Sonata. That's probably why I liked it. Sonata was out wrestling him, but you never get that sense that the other guy is. He never puts himself. You know what he reminds me of? Steven Seagal. He used to, like, I remember watching Steven Seagal, back in the day, and he became this huge movie star. And I remember watching him, and his biggest movie was Under Siege. And in Under Siege, in the end, I think it was Tommy Lee Jones. He ends up fighting, and Tommy Lee Jones doesn't get one strike on him. And this movie was huge, and everyone's like, this guy's going to be a big star. And I turned to my friends and said, this will be his last big movie. He's going down. Like, because the other guy never got the shine, ever. Yeah. And pretty soon, his career went in the tank. Because there was no drama to a Steven Seagal movie. Nobody could not only beat him in a fight, but nobody landed a blow. And that's what I feel like with Zack Sabre Jr. I feel like I don't see the other guys even. I don't sense any danger, even if he is a heel. I never sense that he's in danger.
No, that's actually a really good point. That's something that never fully dawned on me. And then you look back and you rewind in your head the different matches and go back and watch them. I'm sure you definitely pick that up. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. But I do think he will never. I think the highest he could ever go is IC title, and that's a fringe maybe with New Japan. I think he's hit his peak with New Japan.
Yeah, so, there's certain guys it's like, you know, they're going to put to the main event spot, but they're never going to give the belt to. But like Goto, you know, and he feels like that.
Yeah, yep. With 12 points as well, best belt machine, probably one of my favorite guys, so I'm going to be a little biased here, is Kenny Omega. I give Kenny an A+. He had great performances all across the board in his nights. The busted heel, his match with Ishii, his match with Naito, his match with Goto I enjoyed, his match with Juice I enjoyed, Sanada I enjoyed. And his Toriano match was a lot of fun, so I give Kenny Omega an A+.
I give him an A, but yeah, he was fantastic in this as the champion, and he had a lot of pressure as the new champion, and we didn't know what his storyline was going to be, but he was terrific, especially when you consider the injury to the heel.
He's
not, like I say, Okada is the best in the world, but he's one of the guys nipping at his heels.
Yep.
He's the best, I think, at building false finishes of anybody in the world.
Yeah. There are little nuances in Kenny matches. There are little things that will happen that I really enjoy, and it's partially the opponent he's working with, but there's just little things with Kenny Omega. And, I mean, his cartoon selling can be at times a little over the top.
His facial expressions sometimes hurt me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But at the same time, there are times where his facial expressions are spot on, exactly what you want. And in that moment, it's just picture perfect. So I'm a little more biased, I will fully admit. But I believe Kenny gets a plus for this. And I don't disagree with your viewing. Winner of the B block, the Golden Lover, the Golden Star. He has donated his body to science, I believe. I read that somewhere, that he's donated his body, that when he dies, they can examine his body and look at the impacts of that professional wrestling and fireworks has had on him. Kota Ibushi, how'd he do in this G1?
I would give him an A.
Yep.
I mean, he's so great. Like, he had so many great matches. And, yeah, I mean, he seems superhuman. So the fact that they're going to look at his body, maybe they should look at the body of Ishii. That's the guy whose body I want them to look at. Well, actually, he's a superhuman too. Tanahashi, who's clearly beat up. That's the guy. Because Ibushi is just ridiculously, you know, not human. He's his own worst enemy, man. If he would just sign with that company, he would be headlining the Tokyo Dome.
Oh yeah,
no. But he'd rather have the option to not go on tour and go hike the mountains of Africa instead, you know, or whatever he wants to do. Like,
I mean, that is the one thing that I look at Ibushi. He comes from a wealthy family. There's actually a Tumblr dedicated to what clothes Ibushi wears and how much they cost.
And oh really?
Just the cost of some of his clothes, Mo. I could spend the amount of money that he has on camera gear, and I would be a happy camper. I would have everything I could ever have wanted. But he has t-shirts and shoes worth more than the camera that I have right now.
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy. He is the true enigma.
Yeah.
Because he clearly loves wrestling, and he gives it everything in the ring. And he when he's there, he's 100%. He sacrificed his life to be a great wrestler. On the other hand, he's not willing to sacrifice his freedom to be a great wrestler.
No.
Like, it's a weird thing.
And, you know, I think it kind of can, I think you kind of boil it down to is money's not an issue for him. So he doesn't have to sign any massive contract with anyone. He can just kind of float around and have fun doing stuff with different things. And I mean, you're absolutely right. If he saw, that was one thing that I was kind of sitting there thinking is I was wondering if Ibushi wins the G1 and then he signs a contract, even like a year, 2 year contract with New Japan, guaranteed exclusive contract. I was kind of wondering if that could potentially happen, but clearly Ibushi is a man that's a fan of his freedom. I'm sure his neck is not a fan of wrestling, but his neck has
There's something very admirable about it. And yet, on the other hand, it's confusing. And you're like, just sign for 2 years, dude. Just, you're 36. You yeah. probably have 2 to 3 years left where you could theoretically main event here. Because Okada is going to be, for the next decade, going to take probably 8 out of 10 times minimum a slot in the Tokyo Dome main event. Meaning there's only one per year, essentially, over the next decade after this year, right? And so you're just like, just, dude, just sign. You're, you know?
Yeah.
Go back afterwards and do whatever you want to do, but just sign for a couple of years and yeah. do it. Because you're not going to have that chance in 2 to 3 years, 4 years from now when he's 40. The chance is probably going to be gone.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at him, though, and you swear he's in his late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
He does.
He's not.
And that's madness to me, and I'm very interested to see what happens with him. I mean, if something were to happen where he breaks his neck or something, that would be terrible.
The way he wrestles is possible, though.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. That's the thing that spooks me. But that's why I can't give him an A+, because some of the times that he landed on his neck was just like, oh no, don't.
Well, and he had two matches that were too stiff.
Yeah, yeah.
They were the second and third best match maybe in the tournament. But they were too stiff.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and same with Ishii, who we gave up A+ to, but
Ishii doesn't have a neck technically. It's just shoulders.
No, and he has no neck.
Yeah, so he's fine. So that's running through everyone. Let's talk about the final night. That 35-minute spectacle of Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kota Ibushi. Shibata being in Tanahashi's corner, and I've become very well aware of the falling out between the two of them and them coming together in a way not quite like the Golden Lovers, but the reuniting after Shibata had abandoned New Japan. What'd you think of everything that happened in that final? I was surprised to see Shibata there, but that was a nice little added wrinkle to that match.
You know, seeing Shibata was great. I imagine this is torture for him to see this match and know he can't go and do it again. Like, it's got to be hard. You know, Daniel Bryan talked about that. It was hard when he would have to be ringside. It was great. The match itself was so spectacular. Too stiff. This is where guys who follow just New Japan or people in Japan probably don't feel this, but this is where my North American-ness hurts my watching.
Yeah.
In that I think the goal of wrestling is to make it look as real as possible while being as light as possible. I think you're supposed to be Bret Hart or Lance Storm, one of these guys who, you know, who, it's like you don't feel a thing, right? But it looks like I think the Bret Hart Davey Boy Smith match from Wembley Stadium, you know, is better than this match because it looks just about as physical, but it's nowhere close. And that to me is true art. You know, Bret Hart gets up and you'd swear, you watch it 20 times, you swear he drop kicks him right in the face. It light as a feather.
Yeah.
And these guys are just, you know, hitting each other, knees to the chest, like that moonsault thing and the slaps and all this shit. And I hate that. But I can't deny the emotion. And part of the reason why it's emotion that feels important is because, yes, it's fake, and yes, it's booked ahead of time as far as the outcomes. But these guys, even though they didn't have to fight to win, they did have to fight to put on great performances every night for 3 straight weeks of hard-hitting matches at an incredible intensity. And then they have to go out there, and they cannot let the audience down, despite beating the shit out of themselves for the last 3 weeks. They have to go out there and perform that night. And that means it is real. It's not real in an outcome, but that performance is real.
Yep.
And you've been along that journey. It's just as real as any sporting event that they've gone through this grind, this physical torture. They're this hurt, and yet they are giving this much effort in that situation. And that's what makes it real. And that's everything that, not to pick on them again, but that's everything WWE's lacking.
Yep. I looked at this match, was the perfect storm, was the, and because Ibushi had looked up to Tanahashi. He was a big influence on Ibushi. So this was a big match for both of them.
Tanahashi was a big influence on a lot of people.
Yeah.
Even guys like Naito and Ibushi, who's only 5 years older than.
That just speaks to the level of Tanahashi.
That
slapping, that moment of those palm strikes where Tanahashi screaming, and it's not like this little scream, it's a scream from within, just yelling at Ibushi for more, and Ibushi being terrified because it's almost like he's staring at God, and he's realizing he is in trouble. Having Shibata there.
And how about the end when Ibushi kind of gets in his face and you're like, I don't know why he's doing. He's not shaking his hand. He's not hugging him. You're thinking maybe he's going to hug. But Tanahashi just takes a half step forward to him. Like, you want more? And Ibushi's just like, no.
Yep.
You know, gets out of the ring. Like,
and he's almost like Ibushi was crying at the end there. Like, he just covered his eyes and was running. It was a man scared. And it just... Wow, I really enjoyed it. 35 minutes, it sure didn't feel like 35 minutes. It flew by for me. And it was an incredible end. This is a match there's a couple matches from this G1. The final is definitely something worth checking out for any wrestling fan out there. This delivered on the final night of a very solid and a very good G1 tournament. You've told me that there have been better, but this one to me was very enjoyable.
I think last year's was better, but G1 is the best. Like, I'm glad it's over. It's a lot of wrestling to have to watch.
Yes.
It's a lot of giving up your life, but it is the best time of the year as a wrestling fan, without any question.
Oh, I 100% agree. I've got one more G1 question for you, and then we've got a few other things to hit on, and then
I got to get out of here in about 20 minutes, ideally. So
let's see what we can do. We got 20 minutes. Let's book the finish of this. So Omega Tanahashi, do you see either of them losing before Wrestle Kingdom, and what do you think of them headlining the Tokyo Dome?
No. I mean, that's locked in. They wouldn't have done this if that wasn't the story they were going to go with. So I don't think there's any way that they I don't think there's any way they make a change on that.
Yeah, who do you think wins? I know it's far away out, but any early thoughts on
I'm totally 50-50, and again, we'll get into it, but so much of it has to do with, I don't think Omega's leaving.
No.
But so much of it has to do with that.
I will tell you right now, I don't think so. I don't think Omega and the Bucks and Cody are going anywhere. Cody is the most likely out of all of them to maybe go.
I think the Bucks are the most likely at this point.
I don't know. I just have my biggest thing with that is I think the Elite is a package, and when I say the Elite, I mean the Bucks and Omega. I think they very much feel like a package, and if Kenny ultimately doesn't want to go, I just don't know if the Bucks.
Kenny has moved to Japan and he wants to set his legacy in Japan, so I don't see why he's going to go. Cody loves to book his own schedule and loves to take on acting roles and have the freedom to do that. So he's not going to go. So that leaves the Bucks, who might have a ridiculous amount of money thrown at themselves. And while I'd be afraid of the way WWE books, they have so much confidence in themselves and their ability. They believe that they would main event WrestleMania. So that's why I think they're the most likely to go. Now, that said, it's only about, I'd say, 60% staying, 40% going.
No, I don't want him to go. I'm really enjoying I enjoy.
I don't want anybody to go. The fact that Daniel Bryan wants to leave should tell these people, don't go.
Yeah. The ship.
And by the way, Daniel Bryan, when I say he wants to leave, I'm saying he wants to leave. That doesn't mean he will leave.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that he won't be. There isn't logical reason to stay. But clearly, he would have already signed if he didn't want to leave.
Yeah. There's.
or wasn't seriously considering it.
That's a very interesting situation between the two of them. I would agree. It's 50-50 for Wrestle Kingdom. I think ultimately this is the main event. It is the old traditional New Japan versus the new, I guess, the new version of Japan with a splash of indie wrestling with Omega. This is two very much philosophies clashing together in a big main event. I'm excited to see this. I'm already sold on Wrestle Kingdom. I will have no problem watching this on January 4th. You've already sold me on the show. You've already put a button in the seat, more or less, with me.
Yeah, someday I got to get to a Tokyo Dome and to a G1. I got to find a way.
Yeah, to see both of those would be very impressive and very much a treat, because it's such a huge part now of wrestling. I think this is, I feel like this is a transition for wrestling for me, where WWE will always be there, but I think New Japan's starting to earn more and more of a place where it's becoming the central fold for me.
Well, I mean, WWE, I'm not interested in their product at all personally right now. So it's just, that's the way I sit right now with them, unfortunately.
Yeah, no,
I'm interested. I'm totally, holy shit. I mean, here we are. We are, on the weekend of SummerSlam.
Yeah.
They're second or third biggest. And we haven't talked it at all.
And we won't. We really won't. I don't think we'll touch on it at all, which is...
No, that says something.
Yeah.
Like you have managed to take... If a year ago you had said to me, Daniel Bryan is going to have that match with The Miz, I would have been going nuts.
Yeah.
You've managed to make me not... You've taken Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, and even that has been not as bad a build as they have been doing. And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't care because of the way they've just done everything. But damn it, is it ever going to be great to watch what do you call it? NXT, the TakeOver.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm excited for the TakeOver. Gargano, Ciampa. That whole card from top to bottom, I think that it'll be a better show than SummerSlam, and I will far more enjoy it. What was I going to ask you with the G1? I think that's it for the G1. Quickly before we transition to something that I like to speculate about, we got to talk about a big deal with the passing of Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a big, especially when you're, you know, located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, like we are. Jim, I mean, I had a few instances of meeting Jim. They're always interesting. I knew his wife quite a bit better because I worked with her, and one of his daughters worked with her for about a year. And that's where I got to know Jim, when he would stop around. And Jim, I don't know if he was the gimmick or if he lived the gimmick or what, but he was good and bad, exactly what you thought he would be.
Yeah.
You know, but if nothing else, and this you can say about all the Harts, there's, you know, good and bad about the Harts, like there is any family, but certainly there's nothing pretentious or fake. What you see is what you get.
Yep.
And he was huge, you know. Today the shirt I was wearing, I got from PWT's, from actually the J.B. Boy Smith store there, and it says Brett and Owen and Davey and Jim and Brian. That's it. It's very simple.
Yeah.
Pink letters on a black shirt, and I thought there was nothing better I could wear today, day after his passing, than that.
That there was an image floating around online of Brett in color, like in the, like a colored picture of just Brett, and then around him are him raising the hand of the 97 Heart Foundation, and everyone else that has passed away is grayed out, and it's very sombering. I mean, you can talk online about Brett and Brett being sounding and appearing bitter at times. But this is a guy that...
I think that's just a misunderstanding, honestly, most of the time.
Yeah, and I think with Brett, he has been his one of his one of the things that stick out from his book, and I believe in a promo that he had cut, talking about wanting to sit in the Hart House on the porch in the Hart House and having a beer and swapping old war stories with the four men around him. And
yeah, and also a couple other guys.
Perfect.
Yep, Kurt Hennig and Brian Adams, I believe, the crush. He's probably best known. He was one of his best friends. They just wanted to, if you just have that opportunity to sit there and talk with them.
Yeah, and now, I was shocked when I read this. I mean, on one hand, you can talk about there was potential drug and alcohol abuse, going to rehab, and the rumors of having Alzheimer's and stuff like that with him makes it a little less shocking, but still, at the same time, this... When you watch, because I went back and I recently watched the main event for the Calgary Stampede with the Hart Foundation versus Austin, Legion of Doom, Gold Dust, and
Shamrock,
and just when the melee happens, and then
one of the greatest nights of my life.
You were there for it?
Oh God, yeah.
I'm envious because just the because the reaction on the from the WWE Network and listening to just the massive reaction at the beginning and just the cheering when Brett and Austin face off, was it even louder being there live?
Oh God, my ears hurt. My ears bled. I mean, the Bret Hart's entrance, all of their entrance, but especially Bret Hart's entrance, there was nothing like that. Like what it how it comes across on television is exactly how it felt there. Nice. Like it really was just it's unbelievably great event and unbelievably great crowd. We had been waiting for Bret Hart to main event or to be on a pay-per-view in Calgary, not even main event, just even be on a pay-per-view. We've been waiting for a pay-per-view there forever. Yeah. And the fact that we finally got it and, you know, he was champion, everything came together in that one night. He was back together with Owen. Yeah, so amazing.
Yeah, like I look at, I don't know if it's just because we're in Calgary, but any heart we hold in high esteem as wrestling fans, and Brett's definitely a celebrity here. One of, I think he's.
Oh yeah.
He's our major celebrity.
I mean, come on, the UFC just happened. They still showed him, and he got a massive pop from the crowd.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know. Jim, I remember when I really started to get into old school wrestling. One of the things that really helped get me into old school wrestling, because I remember the Attitude Era, and I remembered all of that. And I got the Bret Hart DVD for just because I'd saved up some money and I'd gotten that DVD, and I got to go through Bret's career. And just listening to the stuff with him and Jim the Anvil Neidhart and him tugging on his beard and that little grin that he had and just the way he carried himself, his laugh, just I enjoyed listening to it. I enjoyed everything with the Hart family, that Hart Foundation. This one definitely sucks. Just because it's you feel a little bit, at least for me, you feel a little bit closer to the Harts, and it just it's one of those things that sucks, especially seeing Natalia Natty Neidhart on TV that has carried on her father's legacy. It just sucks, and everything for that family and whatever they're going through right now, because it sounds like it just kind of came out of the blue with Jim. So yeah, this sucked. That's all I got on it.
No, that's the, yeah, it really did. Really did. 63 years old. So just, you know,
and just that image, that image is going to stick with me of just the, two images, the image of him and Owen together, and then the image of just Brett being the last one, because that's really...
Brett doesn't get where he is without him.
No,
Brett was obviously a great talent, but Brett doesn't get where he is without him, without Jim carrying him personality-wise until he found himself.
Yep. Promos, yeah, because you watch a lot of those early promos for the Hart Foundation, and Jim's carrying the workload.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. Jim is instrumental in Brett's, and Brett and him never seem to have a major falling out. They always seem to kind
Trust me, they didn't. And like I say, I worked with his wife, and there was a lot of people in their family, including Ellie, who thought that Brett could have done more for them. I mean, Jim went to WCW. Brett helped get him the job. He made $500,000 a year. They blew the money. She told me all about it, you know.
Yeah.
We got this big house. We bought all these extra cars, more cars than we could drive. They just blew it. They had no sense of – they thought this would last forever. They were foolish. Yeah. They should have been set up for life. It's their own fault, okay? It was, frankly.
Yeah.
But – and they felt – you know, and Eric Brett was making more, and they thought he should have done more and give them more opportunities. And that's not fair, I don't think, to Bret Hart. But, you know, she would be she would get angry because he or she was working now not a great job back in Calgary. And this was before Jim did go on to do some scouting for them for local talent. But this is before that. And it was tough going from all this money now working a minimum wage, essentially job, you know, a little better than. But you never heard of Brett and Jim having a crossword with each other during that period, during the infighting in the family, during anything. Brett would talk about how sometimes they would end up in the same place without even knowing they were going to be there, getting coffee or something like that. Just sit there and talk for a couple hours. They just, it was a true brotherhood.
Yeah. And I think this one definitely hurts Brett. I think this is one of those gut punches that he had talked about in his book. This is definitely,
and Lord knows the business has given them enough.
Yeah, we don't need to go.
The business and life in general has given them enough.
Yeah, they've definitely taken a beating. So, all the best to the Hart family, the Neidhart family, everything. Hopefully, there's enough good people around you to help carry you through this obviously tough time.
Yeah.
I don't want to end the podcast on quite as down a note, but we're running against the clock here. So very quickly, MSG show. How big of a deal is this?
Oh, it's massive. And you know, and like I say, I mean, it's it's massive in so many ways. You know, I mean, part of it is obviously we're going to see a reaction from Vince and other people in that company, but especially Vince. And we don't know what it's going to be.
No.
I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, he's a very different way of thinking than most people already. So, I, very unique mindset for things. And especially MSG, the McMahon family sees that as their birthright and their property. So this is huge. And that's probably the biggest amount of fallout from any of it. Isn't the idea that another company can draw big, and they could. If New Japan and ROH went together into the right building at the right time in Chicago or, you know, Orlando or these places, they could probably draw huge too. But it's MSG.
Yeah.
That's the snowball effect that we don't know about yet is the Vince McMahon reaction.
I'm very excited because you saw what Vince's reaction was to New Japan not wanting to put their content, because there were the rumors of them wanting to do something with the network and
yep.
then pulling out and then having their own network. And what Vince's reaction was to that.
To go out and sign for their guys.
Yeah. I feel like Vince is going to see this as a personal shot.
Absolutely.
I can tell you right now, if the stars align and everything happens, I will be in New York that weekend.
So you wouldn't go to WrestleMania as well?
I would go to Mania, but I would spend more money to get a decent seat for MSG.
Scalpers are going to make a killing on this show.
Oh, 100%. And I still have to wait for things to line up for me, but I'm more than happy paying a little bit more for MSG then I would be perfectly content being in the high upper part for Mania. I don't need to spend a lot for Mania. I'd want to go to Raw the night after just to be a part of that and say, oh, I went to Raw the night after. And then
yeah, that's great too.
The main thing that I care about and the main thing I would want to see is that MSG show.
Absolutely.
That is the draw. The only thing that could change my mind potentially.
You probably have to choose that over NXT.
Yeah, no, you absolutely would. They're going to be running head to head.
Like that's and that sucks because NXT is great like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's absolutely tough. If they could have ran, they could have spaced it out, and I could have seen all three, then I'd be happy. But I'll tell
you. Yeah. Why aren't they going head to head with the Hall of Fame?
The Hall of Fame would be dead. That would lose. The only way that the Hall of Fame beats MSG is if The Rock's going into the Hall of Fame.
It does. Even then, it wouldn't. No. It wouldn't.
I'll tell you right now, if WrestleMania and this MSG show was on the same night, I would pick MSG. I've always had WrestleMania on my bucket list, but
hey, but WrestleMania will be back next year.
Yep.
MSG, New Japan, ROH. This is the first time, and after Vince gets through with it, who knows how many other times?
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. The other big thing is, I don't know how many times I could see Okada and Tanahashi and potentially Omega and the Bucks live like that. Omega and the Bucks is a better chance, but Okada, Tanahashi, and Ishii, like these guys that I'm really enjoying watching, I don't know how many times I'm going to get to see them perform live, and the ability to be able to say in 10, 15 years, yeah, no, I saw Tanahashi and Okada live is...
Well, yeah, or just to say, I was there for their debut in MSG.
Yeah,
everyone would be like, "Oh, that night was legendary."
Yeah,
like the same reaction you had when I said I was there for Canadian Stampede.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. We'll see what happens, but this is as someone that has traveled once for wrestling when it was in Toronto, and someone that's not a big go here, there, and everywhere kind of guy, for me to be out of my shell and actively trying to find a way to get there, I think that says a lot for the state of wrestling.
Too bad you don't have any friends now, isn't it?
Yeah, no. And that's the thing. Like, there's so many things to wait out with doing this, but this has got me enough interested to start doing the research and start figuring out how I can financially responsibly do this and maximize the joy out of it.
You know what? You're too much in your head. Something like this, you do it. Screw the finances. You're young enough. It's not gonna. If you're sitting there going, man, if I hadn't spent that money, my life would have been great. When you're on your deathbed at 100, you fucked up anyways. You. Do this, and you figure it out afterwards. Sometimes I understand the it makes sense in life to ready fire or ready shoot or ready aim fire. Sorry, but sometimes it's ready fire aim, and then you figure it out after.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's very fair. That's very fair. Like this has been something I've been looking at. Just this could be the. This could be one of those moments you talk about when the third man got revealed, the night Mick Foley won, Money in the Bank 2011. This could be one of those moments that's just talked about for decades. Montreal Screwjob for totally different reasons, but this is a moment that could be live on forever in
absolutely
wrestling lore. So. Mo, this has been great. Like, this is an hour and a half we've talked, and not a lot of complaining. This is a pretty positive podcast, I gotta say, which is a nice little change of pace for with the state of wrestling.
That's true. I agree with that. Yeah, no, this is good times, man. Good times.
Hopefully, you know, the future wrestling is in a very interesting place, and I, for one, am excited to see where it goes. Mo, anything you got to plug for us? Anything you want to leave us with?
You know what? No, I'm good.
You're good.
You're on our website anyway, so we're good.
Yeah, you found your way. So, thanks, Mo, for coming on. I'm sure next year I will beat you in the G1. I'm almost positive. So, well.
Yeah. I look forward to talking to you next year, and you know, I'll still be better looking than you, even if you do beat me.
Well, like you said at the beginning, the small victories, Mo. So, Mo, thanks for coming on. We'll probably have more wrestling to talk about. There's a lot of interesting contracts hanging in the air. So we will be talking about that and probably more other wrestling topics to happen this year. Wrestling is one of the more unpredictable things in the world where you just don't know what's going to happen next. So it's going to be a fun ride. But thank you for listening, and we will return.